so.
I'd like to check out your farm, though, man.
I brought the Program Projects and Operations Subcommittee meeting to order. Copy of the open meeting act is posted on the rear of the room, and with that, forum call, please.
Here.
Caesar.
Here.
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 And Jeff.
Yes, thank you. As far as adoption agenda, I'd like to move the interlocal agreement down, item six, to move it after item eight. So with that, I'd request approval of the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thomas.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Franklin.
Hi.
Yes. I have here an affidavit of proof of publication of tonight's meeting notice. And moving now to item seven is review and recommendation on interlocal agreement with Washington County Township Number 1 for the relocation of a 6-inch water main. Now, Zach Nelson, please.
Good evening. So the agenda item I have before you tonight is an interlocal agreement with Township Number 1. What the township is looking to do is take down a section of County Road 40 in between Highway 75 and County Road 45 to the west. Bill, do you want to scroll to the map, please? So, yeah, you can see the Highway 75 logo off to the right, and then County Road 45 off to the left. If you're familiar with that area, it's really hilly. In the past, it would have been the early 90s, the township came up with a preliminary design for that roadway to lower it. As a result, the water main was installed at a depth somewhere around 15 or 16 feet deep. Then the township did not move forward with the project, and now the state's design requirements for roadways have changed. And so in order to improve sight lines, the road actually has to be lower than was originally designed. As a result, it conflicts with our water main. So under this agreement, the township is responsible for 100% of the costs for the design and relocation of the water main. Because of the complexity and just to how congestive a workspace it is, the contract will be lumped in with their dirt work contractor and paving contractor scope of work. So under this, the district is just responsible for providing oversight in the field and helping to coordinate shutdowns of the water main, and then we'll take ownership of the new main once it's installed.
Okay, Chair, entertain a motion on this item.
Move staff recommendation.
Second.
We have anyone in the public wish to speak? Directors? Roll call.
Thomas?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Franklin?
Hi.
Caesar?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Chair?
Yes. Now, item eight is review and recommendation on the bicycle and pedestrian counter and interlocal agreement with the City of Omaha. Eric Williams, please.
Great. The district invests quite a bit of resources in the recreation and natural resource access components of the trail system, primarily along the three main branches, the Little Papio, Big Papio, West Papio. And working with the City of Omaha Planning Department, we would like to support their investment in bicycle and pedestrian counters to be more specifically aware of how many users are on the trails at any particular time. The city has piloted this program already. They had placed an interim device at the end of the Field Club Trail just north of Vinton, just next to the new South Omaha Trail, and then a second device at the east end of the Bob Carey Pedestrian Bridge. And so they have been tracking data for users at both of those locations, and those are both projects that the district has been involved in the past. These counters are able to distinguish between bicycles through an inductive coil to detect the metal, essentially, and pedestrians through an infrared emitter and detector to measure when people cross past the location. And so there's some pretty good data already from those two pilot projects. If we can scroll through past the agreement. A couple more here. All right, here we go. So this is the pilot data for both types of devices. One is called a pyro box, and that one detects the pedestrians.
Yeah,
the pedestrians. And so if you scroll to the next page, okay, so you can see the kind of accuracy of the data that we're able to collect through these devices. It's a daily counting for number of users, the pedestrians on any particular day, breakdown by day of the week, breakdown of hours throughout the day, and hours throughout the weekend. So this really gives a much better understanding of who's using the trails and what they're using them for. This is just for the pedestrian data. If you go to the next one more page, and the tube counter, that's detecting for bicycles, and one more page again. And again, you can see kind of a similar breakdown of days of the week. There's a sudden popularity of bicycles during a particular evening hour. People like to go out and ride on the Field Club Trail when it's nice and still light, but cool in the evening. So this data is really helpful in knowing who's actually out there, who's using the trails, and how we can best participate with the City of Omaha to continue to provide great access to these facilities. This data is all from the end of the Field Club Trail, directly next to the new South Omaha Trail. And I'm going to invite Stephen Osberg from the Planning Department to come up with me as well. Stephen has been leading this project from the City of Omaha side. I think he can provide a little bit more information. So the Field Club counter was placed after South Omaha Trail was open. Is that right?
During the pilot project phase, it was right before the South Omaha Trail was open. We kind of wanted to make sure we had a before count. One of the benefits of having these counters out there is we can kind of get a before and after picture of what happens when we make certain types of investment. So we had placed a mobile counter out there temporarily. Right now we do have a permanent counter installed at that same spot that we installed at the beginning of December. But we don't really, it's not really comparing, you know, apples to apples when we compare winter data to the summer data we had collected previously. So we'll see what happens, you know, as we get through the summer to really get a better before and after picture of what's going on at that particular spot.
There's one more page of data here from, this was all from the Field Club. This is from the Bob Carey Pedestrian Bridge. And do you want to highlight what we're seeing here and why this one looks a little different?
Yeah, so this one, the thing is the report that we showed you before, that's kind of the default report that the web application spits out with all this data. You can also just download it in the raw format, so we prettied it up a little bit so we could kind of tell a story. We were trying to figure out what was going on at the bridge during the College World Series and the swim trials. We thought we'd see much bigger peaks during that time. And actually what it really ended up doing was just kind of leveling it out between the weekends and the weekdays. But one thing this is kind of interesting, it shows really well, is the impact that weather has on activity on a spot like this and why it's nice to have these 24-hour counts. If you look at the July 2nd count there, it's a rainy day, it dipped way down. You know, when you do those one-time counts, when you have volunteers out there, those are great things. But when you, you know, you might catch it on the wrong day where it's rainy or it's too hot or it's windy or something that really impacts everyone. So anyway, it kind of allowed us to see what's going on if we did capture it on a typical day. And if we didn't, we can also use our averages that we collect to kind of factor everything up to a more typical number.
So looking at the top half of the graph here, there has been previous data collected specifically on the trails that we've worked on, and that was through TrailFest. As the memo says, Dr. Greer from UNO had been collecting that data, and it was between, I think, 9 a.m. and noon on a Saturday, one morning from student volunteers. And so we had one particular data point at one time, at one day in the spring and one day in the fall. And if you look at the impact that you can have from all kinds of different things, different events, the weather, Pokemon Go, I would say, shows a not insignificant increase in the number of people at the pedestrian bridge. Pretty obviously, there's weird things happening there. So the data that we had from TrailFest was helpful. Good to know that people are using the trails, but they're no longer collecting that that data through UNO. So we'd really like to be able to see who's on the trails. If you go to the other page, you can see the picture of what the hardware looks like. It's a different page of photos.
One thing worth pointing out too, the funds that we're hoping to get from you here, these would be for permanent counters that would be installed in the concrete and in posts next to the trail. We're also going to be buying one mobile unit though that we can move around, and so that would be available to you if you had a specific spot that you wanted to get some numbers on before or after a project. So
available. The top one here is the pedestrian counter, correct?
Correct. Yep. This is kind of a mobile unit that you would just mount onto an existing pole.
And then if you scroll down, there's a kind of a graphic that shows what it looks like. The figure eight cut in the concrete shows where the coils are placed actually down in the surface of the trail to measure the bicycles.
Yeah, just like a traffic signal coil.
So the funding was included in the budget for this year, and the City of Omaha has requested an interlocal to verify the district's commitment to the project. The funding is $15,000 is what we had budgeted, and that funds essentially three stations. Those would be placed on each of the trail, the main branch trails that the district helped to construct along the three main creeks, so the Keystone, Little Papio, and Big Papio Trail. And those are projects that we've invested a lot of money in. Again, it provides great recreation, active transportation, and access to the natural resources that are so important to the district. So the recommendation is that we approve the interlocal that verifies that the district will reimburse the city $15,000, a flat one-time fee. The city will have all of the ongoing operation and maintenance responsibility, and that we'll put those counters in, and then we have access to all of the data.
Thank you. Chair to entertain a motion on this item.
I can move staff recommendation.
Is there a second, please? Is there a second? One more time. Is there a second? This item dies for lack of a second. I regret that, but that's the way it is. So we will not be presenting this to the board as an action item on Thursday night unless someone chooses to bring it up. Thank you both. Now we're going back to item 6 on the original agenda, which is a review and recommendation on the interlocal agreement with Waterloo Volunteer Fire Department. John Winkler and Travis Harlow, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The proposed interlocal agreement will be between the district and the Waterloo Volunteer Fire Department. And Travis Harlow, the chief of the Volunteer Fire Department, is here, as well as he's an Omaha firefighter.
I resigned back in October.
Okay, well, he's the chief of the Omaha Volunteer Fire Department. And what this would provide is a reimbursement from the district to the Volunteer Fire Department Waterloo for their river rescue operations along the Elkhorn. And obviously, as those, we have three sites there, and those have become increasingly popular with tubers, tankers, and just river enthusiasts in general. And what it has created is a heavy workload for not only fire and rescue, but also law enforcement. So we're a little bit of a victim of our own success. The more people, the more issues you have. Travis can go into more numbers as far as what they're seeing, but there's rescues that they're providing that they actually gear up and get their equipment out there and get their river rescue boat, and it was a false alarm. Or they will treat someone, or they will respond to a call and the person refuses to go in an ambulance or refuses their treatment. So obviously there's an issue with trying to get reimbursement from insurance companies and things like that if they refuse to be taken in an ambulance. So they're obviously a small rural fire department. They have the majority of the responsibility along the Elkhorn, especially the sites that we have recreation areas. So I'll let Travis go into more detail of the stories they have or the numbers they have, but this will also provide on not only to help them with reimbursement, but also on heavy use days like 4th of July, and other holidays, Memorial Day, Labor Day weekend. It will actually allow them to have a presence on the river. Well, they'll actually be out there in front of our sites or by our sites, so people know that they need to behave themselves. We do this a lot with Douglas County law enforcement as well as the game warden. We try to get them out on a boat during those heavy times for people to be using their life jackets, not throwing, discarding their beer in the river, or their bottles anyway. And this would add another layer of, I guess, public safety to those. So, Travis, I'll let you fill in.
Chief Harlow, would you introduce yourself? We're taping this so we get your name on the record, please.
Travis Harlow, Fire Chief, Waterloo Fire. Thank you, guys, and I apologize for being late. I didn't anticipate the Omaha traffic and every red light on the way here. But, John had said, our fire district goes Highway 36 all the way down to Harrison Street. So the Elkhorn River, we cover 100% of that. Omaha Fire, our district, kind of splits right in the middle as you go south. But where we split is where the whole cliff starts. So there's no access to the river really for Omaha Fire side of it. We're 100% get dispatched every time there's a water rescue out there. Back probably 5 years ago, you'd see anywhere from 20, 30 tubers on any given Saturday, Sunday, and it increased. This year we'll probably see anywhere from 1,000 to 2,000 per day on that river. We're responding anywhere from last year. There was one Saturday we made 5 water rescues on one Saturday, but it's an average about 5 to 6 per weekend that we're responding. Anywhere from, you get your drownings, but that's not a frequent call. 9 times out of 10, it's the person was supposed to be back at 9 o'clock, and it's now 10 o'clock, and the wife or the significant other is standing at one of the boat ramps waiting for him. And of course, the party of 8, all of them drown at the same time. So we have no choice, but we have to go out and look for them. Well, what happens is they're on a sandbar somewhere, still having a good time, but we can't just rule it out and say, no, they more than likely didn't drown. So we're out there. Not only are we utilizing our resources, but we have mutual aid with Valley, Bennington, and Able One has been a huge help for us as well. Our tax budget is very small budget. Our airboat last year, we had to put a new motor in. It cost us $17,000. That money just doesn't come from another department. We have to do pancake feeds, raise money, take it from our squad billing to be able to replace that type of equipment.
We have a recommendation from management on this. The chair would entertain a motion.
Move staff recommendation.
Second.
Numerous seconds. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Seeing none. Directors?
Director Teaser. Yeah, I want to point out that and Travis, we had one storm event. Wind came up. I think you had like 60-some rescues in that one event.
Yeah, and a lot of them were just to assist the people out of the water, but then people start scattering and they're in cornfields, and now we got people that don't have a clue where they're at. Not to mention when they're on the river, they don't really know where they're at. They know they put in at Highway 36 and they're supposed to get out somewhere after a bridge down the, several hours later. But now they're in cornfields and we're out there searching and driving down county roads trying to locate everybody from their parties. And that's happened 3 times now over the last 3 years. Is that a big storm will pop up? There was that one where there was a tornado spotted up on Skyline Drive, and that was the same one where we assisted 66 people off the river, and we transported 2.
Okay, well, thank you. Any other questions or comments? Director Thompson, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, this agreement costs are up to $30,000 calendar year. Most of that would obviously be during the summer months and so on. How will you submit an invoice? What's the value of your services? It obviously may vary depending on the type of rescue, but how is that going to work?
We're looking for hard costs. We don't want no reimbursement for personnel or for equipment, dollar figure per unit. Say if the boat goes out, we're not going to say, well, it's $150 an hour. We're just looking for hard costs, fuel, if there's any maintenance breakdowns, to be able to help fund some of our training. That's up to $30,000. We kind of averaged over the last few years what it's cost us at our high times and our low times what it costs. But we're just looking for hard cost reimbursement. Probably
I don't have an exact number, but a higher percentage of the people using that river are nowhere near taxpayers in our village or our rural fire district. So it's tough for me to go to our boards and our rural district and ask them for funding for this when they're going, well, that may name our taxpayers. How is this thrown in our lap? And now we got to provide the service. And unfortunately, when someone calls 911 and wants help, they're calling the fire department. They're not calling my board members saying, hey, come out here and get us out of the river.
Director Weiss, you had your hand.
Yeah. And I'm kind of spinning off what Director Thompson was asking. There's $30,000. Is this something that we just give you up front all at once? Because what happens if you spend $17,500?
Mm-hmm. Yep. My envision and thought would be on a quarterly basis. We would submit an invoice or monthly, however you guys would think we would need to do it. Some months are going to be higher. Some months are going to be lower. I mean, just for instance, the last two weekends, we would have been out there spending money on fuel where we weren't out there because the landings were shut down. So we're not going to have the expenses this month. But, you know, as soon as that river goes down and them tubers start going down there, it's inevitable there's going to be calls.
It's not that we wouldn't, you know, we're not thinking about not wanting to help. It's just we don't want to throw money in and have excess money and then you don't need it and we've already spent it and, you know, then where does it go?
Well, and that could be, too, if we were to get, say, have that $30,000 amount, we could readjust it the following year to go, okay, well, okay. We didn't spend $30,000, we spent $22,000. So now the next year we look at maybe $22,000 versus $30,000 and kind of budget that way every year.
Now, are you guys first call?
What's that?
Who's first call on that in that area?
Waterloo is.
You are?
Yes,
okay. Waterloo's. So you're pretty much first responder, and then if you can't make it or whatever, something happens, somebody else comes in?
If that was to happen, that hasn't happened in the history of my time with
Fire
Department.
Director Fowler?
Yeah, I'm very supportive of what you folks do because I think it's imperative as your area of influence grows, and it will grow, and it will continue to grow. I understand the whole invoicing and how you guys ebb and flow because that's the nature of the business and how you rescue and do what you do. But my question is also not just us as an entity, but going forward, are you looking at other federal grant opportunities? Are you your board and your whoever you're working with, are they also looking for other ways of getting financing other than us?
I guess I don't know if there is any other avenues out there. There is, for pieces of equipment, for say, like if we wanted to get another boat or something like that, but actual to cover fuel costs and some of the small things that eventually add up and hurt our funding. I don't know if there's any other opportunities out there.
There
I don't say I would ever pass up a grant if, you know, something pops up on an email that there's an opportunity for a grant for some funding for water rescue related items. We're definitely going to take advantage of it.
Yeah.
Mr. Wankford,
we've addressed actually this very issue and working with Rich too, that, you know, how do we take care of this? How do we help fund this? And we've talked to several state senators, and the problem is you just can't have a ordinance or a law for just one stretch of a river.
Yeah,
it has to be statewide. And so we've had, you know, is it a fee on a boat registration? Is it a fee on life jackets or a fee on buying a tube or anything that might be associated with that activity? And obviously when you start talking about fees and taxes, you know, then everybody throws their arms up and runs for the doors. But so that's the challenge of how to fund these fire departments that have to respond to these, but then get everybody on board to it. And I'm sure that there's departments out in the Niobrara area and other parts of the state that I'm sure struggle as you do, because I'm sure they get a million calls from recreational people on their bodies of water, and they just don't have the resources to cover it. But there isn't enough statewide, I think, right now to generate a statewide support to get that many votes to approve a new fee or a new tax or some other funding mechanism.
For instance, like Colorado, they have a rafting fee. If anybody's ever went out there and went rafting, yeah. And we've worked with legislation to try to get that. As Zinni said, it's they're not on board with that. With us, this has been kind of thrown in our lap over the last 5 years. If you really look at the numbers, going down the Elkhorn River in a tube wasn't something that was very popular. You'd see them in canoes, and it would happen all the time, but going down in a tube was not something you'd go by and see. Now you go by, and it's like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. It's become a recreational hotspot, and it's only going to get bigger as time goes, because people, what we're seeing is they'll go and spend the $20 with the outfitter the first time, then they go to Walmart and buy the tube the next time for $5. You got three outfitters now. One of them has got 750 tubes that's booked solid. That's one outfitter, and I, you know, he works with us really well. Not only are we're trying to be proactive too, as we've taken Tubing Adventures, all of their staff, and brought them in and taught them CPR, so then they can go out and help and teach as they bring on new employees, but at the same time be able to educate their clients or the people that are going out tubing with safety, and you know, and the law enforcement as well has been out there really enforcing life jackets.
Yes, Director Jeff.
I just had a brief question. Are some of these people drunk on the river? I mean, do you deal with that too, or are they prosecuted, or just go home?
It's not illegal to. They're not driving a motorized vehicle, so unless they can get them for public intoxication. I'll tell you one scenario. We had a gentleman last year drowned. They were doing CPR on him, brought him back. He refused to go to the hospital. We can't force him to go to the hospital. He literally got back on his raft and floated back down with probably broken ribs. There was nothing we could do. Law enforcement was there, and there was nothing they could do. And it's, you take 2,000 people and you give them cases of alcohol. I don't care if it's on a golf course or on a, you know, pasture. You're going to have issues and problems when the weather's 100 degrees. And anything from diabetic reactions to they cutting their legs on the car bodies in the water to drownings to medical conditions.
I've got a question regarding the source of your calls. How many, percentage-wise, how many of your calls do you feel come from the commercial operators as opposed to Joe Public out there just taking his family out on a float trip?
I couldn't even give you an honest answer on that. I know that Brock's got 750 tubes. The other guy up north's got 500, and I believe the other guy was going to have start out with 400. Brock with Tubing Adventures has really been the only one that we've had good communication with. He also has bought an airboat himself that he goes up and cleans up the river and the boats are the landing sites. But as far, it's tough to tell when we're out there. I mean, it's something to see. If you got to just go out over the weekend when it's nice and warm, and you'll see them. The tubes are just lying from bank to bank, from as far as you can see, north and south from every bridge.
Thank you.
I just have one more. And how many tubes, like thousands in a weekend? Or
there'd be like 2,000 a day. Highway 36, we counted as 1,800 last year.
What does it cost to rent a tube to do that?
$20.
So if they charged $21 and kept a dollar for you folks, wouldn't that work?
We've talked about that, but it's there was some legality behind it. And then you got the honesty of when they collect it, that extra dollar.
It seems like that would be a simple solution.
We've asked.
$1 goes to you folks to keep them safe.
We've even tried in the past to throw in a donation bucket out, but that ends up with like $12 in it.
We're thinking about setting up a toll.
You know,
a director teaser.
We also have to look at the general public comes out there, mom, right, dad, and the kids.
Right.
You know, and he, Travis is absolutely right. They go to Walmart, buy a $1.89 dinosaur float, don't wear a life jacket. And nobody has a life jacket, and that's a violation, and it creates a real problem for them.
But they're all getting in certain spots, right?
Yeah, well.
And you can't charge a dollar to get in.
No, you can't. Also, we have several contractors that aren't providing this district with liability coverages, so we do not allow them to use our facilities. And so they put in the private access elsewhere and float down to another private access to disembark. And so we can't control them, but those that use our facilities we can control.
Retract those people still a liability for the fire department. They're out there on the river.
Yeah, everybody is.
They're on the river.
Wow. Any other questions or comments, then? Roll call on the motion, please.
Fred Pendel.
Aye.
Caesar.
Yes.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Yes, thank you, Chief.
Mr. Chair?
Thursday night on the agenda.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
One last thing. Hey, if you guys ever go to Waterloo and want to see this operation, make sure you stop by the Fire Barn Sports Bar and Grill. I know a good guy runs it, and I'd really highly recommend it. Great food.
Harlow?
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks,
Joseph.
Thank now we're moving to item 9 is review and recommendation on the bids for the Little Papio Creek Channel Stabilization Project. Martin Cleveland, please.
Thank you. With me tonight is Pat Engelbert with HGR Engineering. He's our consultant that been handling the contract development and helping with the bidding process. The first map here kind of shows where the project's at. It starts really about Main Street, goes down to Q Street, so there's actually one location down below here. There's 8 locations that are riprap filled, and the location called 9R is actually a rock-filled trench, so it's a little different concept, but there's 9 locations all together. This project was built in the late 60s by the Corps of Engineers. It's showing a little bit of wear and tear due to age. Things and also just the normal activity of creek. You know, the creek migrates and wants to meander, wants to slough during high water events. So it's time to do a little bit of maintenance on that project. Let's go to the photograph. You could, Bill. I think it's in the last thing, probably in the sequence. I thought I'd show you kind of a typical site. This is down near Western Avenue. Western Avenue is actually here in Castries down below. So it's right across from Peeney Park, and it's near the Roberts Skate Park. This is what we call a typical slough that we're going to fill with rock. This is probably the largest one of the group that we have, but basically placing rock in these areas and covering the soil is the kind of the solution. This worked pretty well in the past. You can see some old examples of where it's been done in the past. So this is a typical spot that we're fixing. There's many, many spots in the creek that have issues, but we're trying to pick the worst of the worst when we did this project. And they've been on recent Corps of Engineers inspection reports, so it's something we really need to deal with before the channel is in danger of gobbling up the bike trail or some other features near the slough. You could go to the bid summary, which I think is the second sheet probably. We received bids on the 25th, received 4 bids, and it was, I think, it was probably considered very successful by myself and also by Pat, that we received 2 bids actually within $1,000 of each other, which is doesn't happen very often. Usually you have more spread than that. So there's a lot of competition, I think, at the low end to get this project. And they were all under the engineer's estimate, which is also good because Pat didn't really want to do the work.
Yeah.
So it turned out good from that standpoint as well. So we felt like we had a good bidding climate here and received some good bids. The low bidder is a Niewauer out of Ottawa, Iowa, who's did a lot of work for the district in the past, riprap work, and also Oakland River about a year ago. So we're very familiar with his work and know that he's a competent contractor. Maybe if you want to add anything else, Pat. Pat did provide a recognition letter on this bid summary.
Yeah, I guess the only thing that I would add, one of the reasons or the conditions why we were a little on the high side, there's some access issues associated with these sites. There's a lot of development and encroached, and so we didn't know what kind of premium the contractors may charge with those access issues. So that may explain a little bit why we were a little bit on the high side, but. As Martin mentioned, the 2 low bids were within $960 or so of each other, and the 2 high bids were only about $15,000 or $18,000 apart. So we felt pretty good about the bids that we got. And all of those firms had done work in the past and were competent folks.
Thank you. Well, Chair, entertain a motion.
I move staff recommendation.
Is there a second, please?
Second.
We have a second. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Directors? I've got one question for one of you, probably Martin. It says this project started originally at Pratt Street, but there's not been any problems between Pratt and Maple?
Oh, there's been problems in the past. We've had to do some drainage work and other things. As far as sloughs that need to have immediate attention. There's no slough up there, but you know, the project actually has, if you were to count all the sloughs, probably you could count 40 overall, but a lot of them you can kind of live with. They aren't really endangering the project, but then there are some like these that really need to be fixed. Otherwise, we're going to be having a bike trail fall in the creek or something else like that, more substantial. So this is the same project that you've heard about last year, Nebraska Infrastructure Mart. The Corps of Engineers is doing a $2 million project right now for the district to repair a seepage issue, and it's kind of a sloughing issue that occurred. So it's had a, you know, history of having some problem spots.
Thank you. Director Weiss.
I got one question. When they go back and they fix this, what's your estimated time frame, and how long is this going to last? Do you figure this is going to be a fix that is going to be there for a while, or is this, are you guys considering this to be a temporary? Are we going to have to go back and spend more money? Or is this one of the things that we do it done good for 20 years?
Well, our intention is always when we fix things, is it's a permanent fix. Sometimes we find we do have to fix things again, but typically in riprap work we did, sloughs repairs like this, usually there's about a 95% success ratio. There's always a small percentage if something happens, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that's unpredictable with the Papios is that they have a flash flood type of action on the creek. So water comes up quickly, goes down quickly. When that happens, the water is leaving those banks. A lot of times those banks are very unstable because of that quick drawdown effect, they call it. And so even though we fix things, you know, it isn't always a 100% guarantee. We're likely going to have another spot nearby that's going to be a problem, not the one that we just fixed. But I think you could probably eventually envision the riprapping a lot of the creek just because that's the nature of the Papios.
Are there certain specifics or criteria or anything that everybody has to go by to put these, the riprap and things in? Is there any kind of spec sheet, or do they just, like, the contractor, does he just put them in there a certain way, or does everybody have their own way of doing this? Is there a spec that everybody follows?
Yeah, so there's a couple different conditions that exist out there, Director Weiss, and on eight of these sites, you know, they're pretty straightforward, typical sloughing, as Martin discussed, fairly steep slope, about a 2-to-1. And in those areas, they can go in and just kind of scrape the topsoil off, put a nice geotextile fabric so it doesn't sink into the ground, and then put the riprap back in there. And in some instances, it will require us to tow into the bottom so the rock doesn't fall down into the creek. There's one particular site by the Nebraska Furniture Mart where there's some artesian pressures or some groundwater pressures that exist there. And in that particular location, we had to dig what are called rock-filled trenches. So 30-inch wide trench spaced about 12 to 15 foot apart. And what that does is it allows those to act as drains to alleviate that pressure. But to your original question, we do envision this as more of a long-term fix.
Okay.
There was a picture that he showed of a typical site, and right adjacent to it, there was rock riprap had been placed by the district probably 20 years ago, and it has held and withstood the test of time. And that's kind of why we chose that approach for those types of sites.
Okay.
That's the Rockfield Trench site that's right behind the First Ed Resources building, right across the street from the Nebraska Furniture Mart parking lot.
This is a cross section. Well, I was going to look at this as a standard. It's also based upon Corps of Engineers guidelines.
Yeah.
And so we look at their criteria. And so Corps of Engineers actually reviews these plans, both the what they call the 408 people, the project people, and also the people who do the 404 permitting. So we get a lot of scrutiny by the Corps, and so they have to be satisfied that we're doing the proper thing as well from a geotechnical aspect. And that's why the key trench, for example, is there, and that's why the rock size is basically a 3-foot or 2-foot boulder.
Mm-hmm.
It's a larger rock because it's not going to be swept away by high velocities. And so there's things like that that go into the design that HDR did for us. But it took us about 6 months or more to get the core approval. It took quite a while, a lot of scrutiny. And so
that was my question. That was what I wondered if you answer my question.
Yes. Yeah. Thanks.
All right. Any other questions or comments, please? Seeing none, roll call on the motion, please.
Yes.
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 Yes, thank you. Now we're going to item 10, is review and recommendation on MUD water main work for Zrinski Basin number 2. Amanda Grant, please.
Good evening. Okay, well, we're going to talk again about Zrinski Basin 2, water quality basin for Zrinski Lake. Think about, perfect, Bill, we'll just stay on the map. About 3 months ago, the board approved the final design contract with HDR, and then I think 2 months ago, the board approved the purchase of some land for the project. So this is just another component of that project, which is there's an MUD water main that runs right here. And so the project, let's see, there should be maybe another map, Bill, if you don't know. This is the map MUD gave us. This shows the project maybe a little better. So this would be the embankment and the water quality basin, and the MUD water main runs right along here. And it is, of course, a 54-inch transmission line. It's a huge line. It goes from the Platte West to the Skyline Pump Station. And so we've been meeting with MUD for over a year, probably throughout the preliminary design and the final design, to determine what impact this normal pool of water, which is shown in green, it'll be a normal pool for a while, and then it will sediment in and be a wetland. So it adds some depth to their water line, so we needed to consider their design of that line. So we worked with them, and what they've proposed, there's a drain hydrant, because that's the low point as the transmission line crosses the creek. There's a drain hydrant that would be within the normal pool sediment area of Zrinski 2. So that needs to be relocated uphill a little bit to be out of that. And then the other thing they would like to do is add two access manholes on either side so that they could get in with maybe pumps to pump out the rest of that water or, you know, any sort of maintenance activity that they had. So they've requested, they do have a permanent easement, of course, for that big of line. So the impacts are ours, our responsibility to pay for. They've estimated that number since the beginning. So unfortunately, it's about $236,000 that they've estimated to do that work. And what they are requesting of us is that the district provide them a purchase order or a check. They contract all the work themselves. They schedule that. They use their own folks to do that. And they have a pretty big lead time to get that done. And they also want to do it on, you know, their own terms, which I think means not in the summer when they most likely would need that transmission line. They'd like to do the work in the fall and winter, which corresponds good with our timeline. We'd like to start construction in the fall as well. But to give them the necessary lead time to get a contractor on board, they would like us to enter an agreement where we would provide them the $236,000 for that work. If it's more than that, they will let us know, and we will be charged. And if it's less, they will refund us that money.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Chair to entertain a motion on this item.
Also,
is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Directors? Director Keiser.
What would happen if that pipeline breaks? Would it poison all the water?
Except for it's not that kind of
pipe. It's currently the only pipe bringing water into Omaha from the Platte West water plant.
Yeah.
Accordingly, I will be abstaining from voting on this. Roll call on the motion, please. I didn't see it. You were slow.
Can I make a comment?
Yes.
Thank you, sir. It's purchase order or a check. We're not going to give them a check right away, are we? We're just going to give them a purchase order and obligate the money?
Well, I have not used a purchase order with the district since I've been
here. It's basically giving them,
I
like
think we would give them a check is what I was planning to do.
I mean, you said they won't do the work until wintertime, so.
Well, we can work with them when they want it, but.
Right.
They want the money up front. And then, like,
so well, it says check or purchase order.
Yeah, well, we don't have purchase orders.
Yeah. So they won't start work until they get paid.
Yeah,
that's the way. That's it's their way on
they
that.
They don't want
to. I think they said they saw you the
they need a lot of my money. I know that.
Right.
They fall under, yeah. Any other questions or comments? Roll call on the motion, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Aye.
Here.
Abstain. Now we're moving on to review and recommendation on interlocal agreement between the City of Blair and Papio NRD for California New Bend Restoration Public Access. Martin Peterman and Al Shoemaker, please.
Good evening. Jim Bisick would normally be making this presentation, but he is he's in Nebraska Land Trust meeting up in Fort Niobrara, so he'll be back Thursday. But handing out information for you is the Public Works Director for the City of Blair, Al Shoemaker, and he'll be making part of this presentation. Primarily, this interlocal agreement that's being proposed to the City of Blair involves the California Bend, Missouri River Restoration Area, just north of the City of Blair. There's a photo here, I think, was up on the screen.
Coming.
an area that was restored through a cooperative project with the Corps of Engineers in 2003. As part of the river's restoration work that the Corps did there on about 220 acres of property that were acquired by the NRD at that time. And we provided 35% of the cost share with the Corps for restoring backwater and chutes along the Missouri River in this area, primarily for habitat for the pallid sturgeon on the Missouri River. So we've got this property, and at that time there was an interest expressed in provisions made for potentially opening this area to public access, and that's what's being proposed here this evening, is in an interlocal agreement with the City of Blair to do that. Maybe I'll hand it over to Al here, and sure, he can kind of explain this a little bit.
Mr. Chairman, fellow board members, good evening. My name again is Al Shoemaker. I'm the Director of Public Works for the City of Blair, and I'm here to represent our community in our request to enter into an interlocal agreement with the Papio NRD on this project. As Marlene discussed briefly, as the City of Blair City Council has a desire to extend our trail system up into the California Bend area. A lot of public interest to do that within the area. Just to give you a little bit of an understanding of kind of what's down there now, this is the Blair Water and Wastewater Plant, which, by the way, does have the entire flood control finally constructed, that you folks were very generous in helping us with as well. We appreciate. As a part of that, not a part of that work, but one of the other projects we did was extend the Lincoln Bike Trail, which currently terminates right here at the riverfront. It's on the north side of the Optimus Park. And so what we are proposing to do is to the city owns the property currently in this area right here. This is a wetland restoration area for the wetlands that were disturbed as far as the other work. So we would be able to avoid that, extend further up into the north there, and ultimately extend up through the California Bend area here for a trail system that would be basically about a 10-foot wide rock trail. I call it a bike trail. Obviously, there's some bikes that can navigate it, others won't, but I think there'd be a lot of interest in pedestrian traffic. But again, if you go back to the trail, I think, or the park here, this makes for an excellent trailhead area. There's a wind tower here that's being removed. There's a concrete pad that's going to remain. My suggestion to the City Council, which I think they're going to go with, is to actually develop a trailhead right here for families to be able to come down here. Walk up into the California Bend, enjoy the park. Of course, we have the boat ramp to the Missouri River right here as well. So this area gets quite a bit of public use, especially during the warmer months of the year. And like I said, what we would like to do is it'll be a multi-year project, but start extending that rock trail up into the California Bend area here, as is shown at the proposed easement area here. Probably try to do maybe a half to three quarters of a mile a year type of thing. Moving it up through that area and opening it up for public access, so people come up and kind of see what you folks have done, see what the Corps of Engineers is trying to do, just kind of a nice nature area all the way around and really attractive for the public to utilize. So with that, I'll try to answer any questions.
I'm going to get a motion on the floor first. We have a motion. Is there a second, please?
Second.
We have a second. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Seeing none, directors? Seeing none, roll call.
Whoa.
Wait a minute. Okay, you're going to quit. Yes, Director Bradley. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chairman, I was wondering, now, do you have, from the people of Blair and a lot of the population, positive feelings for this project?
Yes. We're actually right now, pending your folks' approval of this, there's already a movement to start garnering volunteers to help us with this project and get it going and moving it forward. So, yeah, there's a very positive within the community. We have a lot of folks already coming down, like I said, to the riverfront park there, but it's the end of the trail. That's it. And you just kind of come down, see the river, turn around, go back home, if you will, or go back up the trail. I think this would really give, there's a lot of desire to keep that trail system going and extend it and offer other opportunities for families to utilize and expand into the other areas.
I think that, yeah, that's a really good question. Actually, the city of Blair a few years back actually went through a public information and involvement process in developing kind of and they're actually developed a master recreation and habitat plan for this California Bend area. So there was the community all brought in to provide input and do a survey and choose from kind of a suite of activities what they'd like to see out there. And primarily what's being proposed is passive recreation-like things, like I said, hiking, biking, fishing, bird watching, you know, those sort of activities. And so, yeah, there really is for some time been a lot of interest, and they've really sought the city's, I think, patrons and what they want to do.
Thank you, Marlon, because one of the reasons I bring this up is I've been talking to people, and this is sort of a little bit off the subject, but for my district, for putting a trail at Cunningham Lake, and there's a lot of people starting to approach me to get that done, positive feeling from the, you know, people of my district. And so, like, you know, put that out for, you know, the future for different board members to sort of think about. But I totally, you know, approve, or for me, when it comes Thursday night, approve this project.
I'll just comment, this is a permissive item. We're not financing this. This is Blair's total project, and all this is, we're giving them the authority to move ahead with it, and so we're not funding it. Any other questions or comments? Director Weiss.
Wait, just clarification, they did have an application in for our trails program. That's been approved by the courts.
Oh, okay. So
we're giving them some money.
We are providing through a separate program some assistance for putting in a rock trail.
But not this particular agenda item. So.
Right.
Okay, Director Weiss.
When you put that trail in, what's going to be up there? You're just going to have a trail that goes along the wetlands, and are you going to be able to do anything other than just to walk up and back, or what?
Basically, that would be the goal of it.
Because it was talking about some hunting and fishing and doing different things.
Hunting would not be allowed. And one of the reasons I say that is the Corps of Engineers, again, does have oversight over this. It's mm-hmm. primarily their habitat restoration project, although we acquired the land and we own the land. Mm-hmm. But hunting will not be allowed out here. Fishing will, those sort of things.
For example, if I had two kids, I'd say, well, let's go walk to the end. We need to walk up there and go fishing, so that would be good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, so
encouraged.
Maybe go to the, can you make that just a little smaller so I can see the whole. So, again, right down here is where they would access the trail, and the dash line is actually our property line. And so what we own is over to the river here in that kind of big triangular-shaped piece. And what was built was a chute coming through right here to get some off-river flow that was slower and more habitat. There actually was another chute built right here But our 2010 flood did a good job of filling that one in. But this one is open. And so the trail, which is really we kind of have as a roadway right now, is the solid line here. And it veers out closer to the chute here and then goes in and then just kind of a little circle. So it really is a dead-end route at this point. But it is... It is quite scenic and quite, and so that, I think, people traveling up there just come back, but.
What's the yellow?
Pardon me?
What's that yellow line?
That's your road.
This?
Yeah.
That is the trail. That's the road. Yeah, I'm.
Oh, okay. I thought you were looking at the dotted line. I thought the dotted line.
The dotted line is the property line.
Oh, okay.
So that's our property line. Now, the road or the trail is actually this solid line.
That's your actual trail.
Goes, yes.
Okay.
Our thoughts are to follow that quite a bit.
Yeah. Any other questions or comments?
Are there any hunting properties adjacent to this that this might interfere with?
I don't believe so, because this is pretty much all farm ground, just outright bordering because the entire.
Right about where that X is, I used to lease, I think, that property 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And, just kind of curious.
Not today. Okay. Yep, that's changed. We acquired this in early 2000s. And I think, the nearest thing, I think, wooded area is about a mile north is Cottonwood Marina.
Yeah.
And there's, I know, some wooded and treed area up there. In fact, one of the things that was discussed in the public inputs is that ultimately there's even some thoughts of connecting a trail up to Cottonwood Marina. And so actually carrying it on up there. But that'd be down the road and off this property.
Any other questions or comments? Roll call on the motion, please.
Fowler.
Yes.
Brigham.
Aye.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Chair.
Yes, thank you all. I believe that concludes our agenda. We are adjourned.
We have a rather lengthy FEL subcommittee meeting tonight, so we're going to dive right into it. Call the meeting order. The Open Meeting Act is posted outside in the back wall with that quorum call.
Martin's got to get there first. He got caught in the crowd.
Yeah, caught in the crowd.
Everybody's exiting.
Mr.
Brad Bradley. Here. Pencil breaks. John
Conley. Here. Let me try
my work a
little
better. Thompson.
Here.
Please.
Here.
Caesar.
Here.
Adoption agenda?
So moved.
Second? Someone?
Second.
Thank you. Roll call.
Weiss.
Here.
Thompson.
Yes.
John Conley.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
And the chairperson.
Yes. I have before me proof of publication. Moving on, item 6, review the recommendation of accounts over 110% Elk Pigeon Creek Equipment Rental, Zach Nelson. Good evening, Zach.
Good evening, Rich and directors. Tonight, the budget item I have, or the agenda item I have before you is a budget item for equipment rental for account 17-01-000-4475. This is for equipment rental used on the Elk Pigeon Creek IPA. For a little bit of background information for those of you that are new to the board, in 1999, the Papillon-Missouri River NRD merged with Drainage District Number 5. Drainage District Number 5 is in Dakota County and collects special assessments for the Elk and Pigeon Creeks. The IPA brings in around $45,000 a year in those special assessments, and that goes towards the upkeep and maintenance of the levees. Since 1999, the district's done a number of projects on both levee systems, which total almost 15 miles So it's quite a massive liability, and the levees themselves were not built to any of the standards around here, so they require a lot of maintenance. Recently, this last year, we started on a self-performed project of having two of our staff run two hydraulic excavators to dredge out the Pigeon Creek. It's really unique in that it's perched and that it's silted in over the years to where the creek channel is actually higher than the adjacent farm fields. As a result, a number of the culverts along the creek don't function and just creates potential issues for blockage and flow. So, Bill, if you want to go to that Google Maps, I can. So here is Cramper Lake, just outside of Hubbard, and the Pigeon Creek levee system runs here from South Bluff Road all the way along here, and then our jurisdiction ends right here, right around Highway 75. This stretch is a little over 6 miles. So starting last September, we kind of started on the ambitious task of dredging sediment from the channel, removing 5 feet in some areas of silt in that channel, and then trying to slope the banks. At the time, we anticipated stopping work the first part of December. Weather ended up being a lot more favorable than anticipated, and we were able to work pretty close to Christmas time. And then starting right around the 1st of March, the guys were able to get started again. So as a result, from all the work that's happened in here in the two additional months, we are in a position we're probably going to go over on equipment rental charges. I'm under the impression we're already out there on site. Let's just get the work done now, and whatever we spend now is just less than we have to spend in fiscal year 2018. And then, Bill, if you want to go to that picture, here's kind of a picture of the progress. They have to go back and do some general shaping of the areas, but it's pretty impressive between two guys that they were able to get all the way down 1 6-mile stretch and are now almost all the way back on the right-hand side of the bank. I know just the support whenever I go up there and we stop for lunch, it's the public's pretty appreciative of the work because it's long overdue. I would entertain any questions at this time.
Move with staff recommendation.
Second.
Who is doing work? Lowell?
Lowell Raber and Wally Julin. Yeah, and I just want that to go on the record. They're doing an amazing job.
Rich? I'm over here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Get your nap later.
Go ahead.
Zach, this is an IPA property, right?
That is correct.
Now, do they have funds in the IPA to pay for this?
Under kind of the, I have to look back at the meeting minutes from last September, it was approved that this is a capital project. So what would happen is the district would front the money for the project and then split it 50-50 with the IPA, and the IPA would reimburse the district over the course of the next, it'll be about 3.5 years. And that's similar to what the district did when we did project on Elk Creek, where the district fronted the money for the land rights, and then the IPA paid back the district over about 4 years.
Thank you.
Is there any comments from the general public? Okay, now, directly.
I got a question. You worked the next 2 months. You know, you said December and started early. Mm-hmm. Now, is there a budget already figured in on this? Because you shouldn't really need any more money. All you did is you just worked 2 extra months since you didn't know you were, so shouldn't it come off the back?
Well, it was assuming we would get a number amount of months in fiscal year 2017 and then roll into 2018. And so what this is saying is that because instead of working, you know, 4.5 months or 5 months in fiscal year 2017, we're working about 7 months. So it's just money we just don't have to spend in the future. Yeah. And part of it's become, too, the scope of the work. I mean, they were able to move so quickly, we're just making it look really nice so we don't have to touch it for years to come.
We did far more than we anticipated.
Yeah. To be real honest, I expect them to get up one side, and they're now literally all the way back down the other side already.
Any further questions? Seeing none, roll call.
Bradley.
Yes.
John Conley.
Yes.
Weiss.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Chairperson.
Yes. That concludes our heavy agenda. We stand adjourned.